This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 20th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 405. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, in 2021, a Vancouver tech company that sold encrypted smartphones and network subscriptions made worldwide headlines for the wrong reasons. European and American authorities shut down Sky Global and accused CEO Jean-Francois Ypres and distributor Thomas Herdman of helping transnational drug traffickers and money launderers. Joining me from Paris is my guest, Thomas Herdman. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The beginning of the end for a Vancouver encrypted messaging business was mid-2019. That's when a French court opened the door for Belgian, Dutch, and French police to hack the Sky ECC servers in France. Sky Global had called its modified smartphones and Sky ECC network unhackable. Legal experts in Europe called it a jackpot for police because they intercepted a billion messages that led to thousands of charges and convictions. The CEO, Jean-Francois Ypres, and a distributor, Thomas Herdman, were charged in San Diego on March 12, 2021. U.S. federal prosecutors accused Ypres and Herdman of racketeering conspiracy and conspiracy to distribute controlled substances. They claimed Sky Global netted hundreds of millions of dollars in profit over a decade by selling Sky Global phones and Sky EC subscriptions to drug traffickers and money launderers around the world. Authorities shut down Sky Global. Ypres and Herdman both proclaim their innocence. But more than 4 years later, nobody involved with the company has been put on trial. Thomas Herdman cooperated with American prosecutors but ended up in a French jail. He stayed there for 4 years. His trial is scheduled for late 2026. After numerous attempts by his lawyers, Herdman was finally released on bail on June 24th. Joining me from Paris is my guest, Thomas Herdman. Thomas, start from the start. How did you get involved with Sky Global, and what was your role with the company?
It's been a long haul for me. And forgive me if some of this is probably very emotional for me as well. But basically, this started for me in 2016. I was friends with a fellow trader. I am a technical analyst and a trader. I trade in futures markets, specialize in trading oil and gold futures contracts. And I met a fellow trader in Vancouver. His name was Grant Parcell. And there aren't many traders really in Vancouver, so it was unusual to find somebody. I thought maybe it would be a kindred spirit. And we started talking about trading. And then in 2017, he invited me to join his company. And he said that he was trading some portfolios for some friends of his, like friends and family. And he started me doing that. Later on in 2017, he introduced me to a secure messaging company that he was thinking of going into business with, and that was called Sky Global. I'd never heard of it before. I'd never been in the communications business at all. So it was a little bit out there for me, but I like new challenges. So he introduced it as a business concept that he wanted to get involved with, and that Jean-Francois Ypres was a very good friend of his. It turned out to be the best friend of Grant Purcell's wife. Let me just put that again. So Jean-Francois Ypres' fiance was best friends with Grant Purcell's wife. So I guess he had discussed about doing some business with Sky Global, And Jean-Francois Epp proposed to give Grant Purcell a distribution agreement regarding Sky Global. Grant didn't seem to have any idea what to do with it. He had two or three clients, I think, by June. I was finishing up a project with Iran at the time. I had gone to Tehran, I had gone to Kish Island in Iran, and spent some time in Oman and Dubai. When Iran was going to open up with the nuclear, I guess it was the non-proliferation agreement with the United States and a number of countries, I was working for a company that was going to act as a gateway for Canadian oil services technologies. And they were going to sell, be the first company, Canadian company in there, into Iran, working with the Iranian government. So I was sent there twice to negotiate with the Iranians, and I learned a lot, and I learned that it was it's a crazy place, and it's a very hard place to do business. Grant Purcell saw this as, Tom Herdman is doing some pretty interesting things with different governments, and he thought that I would be a good fit to help him launch his distribution of Sky Global. So I met Jean-Francois Epp in July 2017. Of course, the Iranian deal went south because when Trump came in, the nuclear agreement was scrapped. So I was looking for something new. I had a very interesting meeting with Jean-Francois Epp. He's a very capable person and extremely good businessman. He was doing several businesses, and he explained what his Sky Global was all about and how privacy in general had eroded for the last, 20 years since 9/11, and that privacy had become marketable. Become a business. This was all brand new to me. But what was really impressive about Sky Global at that time was that he had already been in business for 8 years. So I didn't come in here as a co-founder or an owner of Sky Global. I was coming into this in a company that had been established for 8 years. They were doing a great business. They had a nice office on Hastings Street in Vancouver in the Jameson House building. And they had some very good infrastructure partners. They were working with BlackBerry, first of all. They were even hiring from BlackBerry. Jean-Francois Epp had been dealing with Rogers Communications for, I believe, 10 years. Before I walked into the office. In fact, they were doing marketing for Rogers Communication right in the Sky Global office. They had a lot of very capable management and technical people, both front end and back end. And as I said, this company had been operating for 8 years. I asked all the questions about law enforcement. Law enforcement had never been in the office. I asked about it, whether the business was legal, the selling in different countries was legal, and so on. It was impressive. I mean, their other partners were AT&T, Telefonica, KPN, all of these players and infrastructure partners knew their business. Rogers Communications knew Sky Global's business. I decided to join through Grant Parcells' company, and that was called TGA Associates. I was basically a manager for resellers and distributors around the world, and we were starting from zero. Sky Global would give Grant Parcells' company leads that came from the Sky Global website for resellers and distributors. And then what I was going to bring to the company, because tell you the truth, with no communications background, I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to fit in. But my suggestion, which meshed with Jean-Francois Epp, was that I would like to see what they had develop into an enterprise software, that this software would be large systems, on-premise systems that would be sold to governments, that would be sold to tech companies. So my side was to develop that for Grant Parcell and also work on the leads that were coming from Sky Global's website. And then everything got started after that.
What was going on in your world as the European authorities were doing what they were doing to crack the server in France, and then the American authorities in San Diego got the grand jury indictment?
March of 2021 was, it was devastating for me. I had really no context. Right now, I understand the whole backstory of what law enforcement was doing, what judiciaries were doing. But at that time, I had already quit the company. I had quit TGA Associates, which later became known as LevUp Technologies. I quit that company eight months before. And I was already involved in a new project for, almost a year. So, and I was planning my retirement. I was in Panama at the time, and I've been an expat most of my life. I spent 20 years in Japan, and I love to travel, and I love sports, and I've been a surfer all my life. So I was looking at residing in Panama. And that's when I got the news from a friend who said, you know, I think it's a little early for April Fools, but you seem to have an indictment by the American government. When I read the indictment, I was shocked, but I was confused. I thought maybe it wasn't the same Thomas. There was another Tom involved in Sky Global. But perhaps they could have got they've got them confused. it turned out not to be. I was so shocked, I thought that it could be something that I could get explained to me, or I could explain it. So I immediately hired some lawyers, American lawyers, and had them contact the American prosecutors, and sure enough, it was me that they wanted, and they thought that I was the right-hand man of Jean-Francois Epp. I was some kind of a founder and top executive of Sky Global Communications, and all this was wrong, and I was really eager just to straighten out everything.
You cooperated with prosecutors. Talk about that, and then talk about how that took a wrong turn to get you into France.
It was, it was a very difficult time. Our first communication with American prosecutors was interesting, because I was actually on my way back to Canada, and it was during COVID. I had to take a roundabout flight to France, and I was going to Vancouver. I was going to spend 2 days in France and then go over to Vancouver. When I landed in Paris, my lawyer said, don't move. We've contacted the Americans, and don't worry. They're not interested in you. They're using you to get to App. Okay. So he said, stay there. So I stayed in Paris, and we then engaged with the Americans. The Americans wanted meetings. They wanted Monaco, Iceland, and then they, for some reason, they decided on Madrid. So, fine, whatever. I'm here to help. I'm here to clear up everything. So in April 25th, I went to Madrid. They showed me clear passage, safe passage to Madrid, no red cards or anything. So I went there and we spent 3 days, like a marathon session for 3 days with members of the DOJ, which were the U.S. Marshals Office, the DEA, the bureau chief of the DEA. The prosecutors, the caseworkers from the DEA in California. I didn't even know what the link was to California, to tell you the truth. So it was a bizarre 3 days. But basically it came down to they wanted me to testify against Jean-François Epp. They thought that I was the top person in Sky Global. And they thought that I could basically testify and give them this person. And they wanted him, and they wanted him bad. And I was going to be basically immunity for everything I said, everything that had happened. And I agreed to cooperate 100%. The worry going through my head from the very beginning was, what if I can't tell them anything that's really, you know, that can put Jean-François away? And tell you the truth, there really wasn't anything that I could say. Yeah.
So how did you go from sitting in front of U.S. prosecutors to being in the French justice system?
Very, very crazy. As I said, I agreed to work with the Americans in what's called a proffer agreement. It was basically a gun put to my head. It was either fight them in court, which would probably ruin my family, cost $6-7 million to go to trial, or cooperate with them through a proffer agreement. I was told by my lawyers, it's fine. Okay. This is what they do. They twist everybody's arm. You go free. Just tell them what you know. It turned out that they wanted a little bit more too. So I went through another 4 or 5 proffer meetings, like by telephone, one in France. And then they told me in May that they would like me to move to Madrid, to work closely with the DEA and the bureau chief. His name is John Walter, on some type of a project. So basically they wanted me to work as a confidential human source. And I have no idea what they wanted me to do. And they asked me to move to Madrid. So I did. I cooperated in that. I got a place in Madrid. They were going to cover all my expenses, pay my salary. So it's a major cooperation. And the Americans told me also, and they told my lawyers that were present in Madrid, that all of their partners in Europe knew this. That included the French. In particular, the partners in this case are Belgium, Holland, in France. Then in May, on June 4th, 2021, the Spanish police came to my home, waited politely outside till I came out. They told me, "It's very strange, but we're going to put you under arrest. We don't really understand why." And they very politely took me to the police station. And from that point on, I was held for 4 years and 1 month. So 49 months incarcerated. And it was a European warrant, a European-French warrant. And I was extradited by the French government on the 18th of June, 2021.
You spent 4 years behind bars there until recently. What happened in the final weeks and days of before you were bailed, and what are the terms of your bail?
The 4 years was incredible. It was terrible. I was incarcerated in Fleury-Mérogis. It's the most notorious prison. It was 4 years without trial. And let me emphasize, the trial isn't going to be until November 2026. So it'd be 5.5 years. I was held most of the time in 22-hour confinement to my room. The doors are not open. I was in a room for 35,000 hours, almost 1,500 days. I was allowed out for the what they call a promenade or the exercise yard for 2 hours a day. And they have a very limited amount of educational and activities, very, very, very few. I took a philosophy class later on and a mathematics class just to keep myself busy. But basically, I was in the room 22 hours a day. I was even put in solitary confinement for half a month, which was absolutely crazy. And as you just said, 4 days, I guess, or 5 days before I was released last month, a kind of a SWAT squad, a military SWAT squad that works for the penitentiary, came into my room while I was meditating. I think I was listening to Mozart. Yeah, I was listening to Mozart at the time, lying on my bunk. And they came in with flashlights and military uniforms and flak jackets, and put their elbow against my neck and held my hands and told me to stay still in French, whisked my bunkmate, my cellmate, out of the room, and then dragged me down the hall 50 meters to a room where they beat me.
You eventually did get medical attention, but it wasn't immediate, and you had to really plead for that medical attention.
I'm a pretty fast healer. It's pretty good, but I had a baseball size swelling on top of my brow. I was hit with an elbow here, and then I was smashed in the face twice with a fist. I had six guys jump on me. I was handcuffed. My hands were handcuffed in my back, and then I was held up by my hands and the handcuff with my back arched above the ground, and I was slammed into the ground, and I was beat up really good. My face was all swollen. And after that, I was dragged, made to walk in a very like a frog style walk back to my cell afterwards, which had been completely trashed. Everything in my cell that I owned and my food and everything had been torn apart. So I spent the next 7 hours cleaning up my cell in kind of a shock where I would clean. I cleaned up till 2 a.m. and then I would go and vomit. I had a terrible headache. It turned out to be concussion. And I tried to get medical help. They refused. They basically said, don't call us unless you're dying or dead. The next day, I had a philosophy class, ironically. And even with my injuries, I went to the philosophy class because it was the only way that I could talk to a civilian in the school area that could help get me medical help from the infirmary, which was just down the hall from the school. The doctor was kind enough to come to my room, check me out, and then they determined that I had to go to the hospital right away. So I got an extraction. I was taken to the hospital for about 24 hours, I guess. Had all the checks done, MRI in English, x-rays of my elbow, my head, and so on. And then I was released. And of course, 5 days later, I had a hearing. I went into the hearing looking like I had just been beat up, of course. The judges were surprised. The prosecutor was surprised. They apparently hadn't ordered it, so they didn't know why it had happened. But the hearing was different. I've had like 30 hearings for release in the past. It's been 4 years. But in this hearing, it was almost as if everything had already been planned. They did not tell lies about me. They said that I had been a good father and I'd been an exceptional athlete in Canada, and that I had been a very hard worker. And they talked about Japan. I had been a professor in a Japanese university for 15 years. First time they'd ever said anything nice to me. So I knew something was going on. And then the judge said that I could leave. But I could leave under judicial control, which still means being incarcerated, by the way. I have an ankle bracelet, and I have to pay a bail, and I have to stay in France. So Île-de-France is my jail now for another year and a half, and I'll have to be put through a 3-month trial where I think almost 28 people stand trial, and I will be the only one.
You are the only one that is there, that at least that I know of, and is facing the trial, as you say, near the end of 2026. You're stuck there, even though you've been receiving a lot of moral support from your daughter, Julie, who I've interviewed before for the Breaker.News. You're the only one that is facing the music.
I'm not a jealous person. It doesn't really bother me because I didn't really see anything at Sky Global that was illegal. But it does bother me that I wasn't close to being, I wasn't really close to Sky Global, the company. I was working for another company. And in fact, I was a private contractor myself, working for an associate company of Sky Global. You would expect that I would have some kind of ownership in Sky Global or a distributor, which I didn't. But what happened, I believe, is the Americans wanted to believe this story, that I was a top person in the company. They communicated that to the French. They didn't think the French would act on anything, but the French then acted on that for 4 years without facts. And what facts now are in the case show very clearly that I didn't work at Sky Global and I didn't participate in the management and I wasn't a distributor. I was a private contractor. The France didn't have anybody else. So they had this huge pool of data. that they wanted to monitor, and they wanted to do that, and they wanted to share it with Eurojust and their partners in Europe. And France became heroes for sharing this data after breaking into it. And to tell you the truth, it wasn't France that broke into it. They had said that, but it was the Dutch that did that. The French have taken credit for everything, but actually they didn't do anything at all. In fact, they didn't even find any facts. My feeling is that I've been here as a scapegoat to rationalize the seizure of that data. And then they wanted to string it out as long as possible so they could make arrests in Belgium and Holland and put criminals in prison based on that data. But I don't think they really wanted to take Sky to court quickly. They purposely want to drag this out as long as possible because they don't have facts. And they know I'm not the person they thought I was. And it's really the crime that I see as a violation of human rights to keep me almost like a terrorist, because even in France, 4 years is crazy. It just 4 years in prison without trial doesn't happen unless there's blood involved. In my case, there was no blood, there was no victim, there was no theft, there was no fraud, and there was no facts regarding me from the beginning. They just needed a reason to hold that data. And I'm afraid that the French don't like to admit they're wrong. And I'm here, and I'm still here. It's going to be dragged out for 5.5 years, and I can't tell you what it's done to my family. It's taken my ability to work, to take care of them just when I'm reaching retirement age. It's like killing me to my family. My mother had a stroke in December. My mother's wife of the deputy chief of the Vancouver Police Department. He served until 1984, 40 years in the Vancouver Police Department. And she's left alone. I can't go back. So, it hurts.
The highest profile case in North America involving Sky Global clients is out of Minnesota. In January 2024, the U.S. charged two Canadians and an associate of the Iranian government, Adam Richard Pearson and Damian Patrick Ryan, are accused of using Sky Global to communicate with Najee Sharifi Zindashti on a murder-for-hire plot targeting opponents of the Iranian regime. Zindashti is an Iranian drug trafficker linked to Iran's Ministry of Intelligence and Security. He allegedly agreed to pay $350,000 to Ryan, a full-patch BC-based member of the Hells Angels. Ryan then recruited Hells Angels affiliate Pearson. Foreign interference, organized crime, and the fentanyl crisis. They're stretching law enforcement to the limit on both sides of the 49th parallel. Victims, especially homeless addicts, are easy to spot on streets in cities and towns around British Columbia and beyond. Thomas Herdman from Vancouver is fighting the charges in France, and he says he is innocent. Near the end of my interview with Thomas Herdman, I pointed out that there will very likely be those in the audience of this podcast that will believe punishment is warranted for a Canadian accused in another country of enabling criminals.
But what would you say to those in the audience who won't have any sympathy for someone who is being subjected to law enforcement and prosecution for being part of this industry? What would you say to those people?
There's so much I could say, but privacy is a cornerstone of democracy. I believed in privacy growing up, and I felt that privacy was important because what it allows the individual to do in our society is to reveal himself to the world as you please. So my father, as I said, was a police officer. I think he originated the Vancouver drug squads. And one day he held up a letter for me when I was 12 or 13. And he said, you know what? He said, as a policeman, I would love to open this letter. It would make my job a lot easier. And then he said, you know, you can't. It's a terrible penalty for opening a letter, either by government or by anyone. And then he said that, again, as a policeman, I would love to open this, but as a patriot, and as somebody who served in World War II against fascism and so on, he said, I would die to protect our right to privacy. I still don't know why he had that talk with me, but it really hit me, and I never forgot it. And the first thing the prosecutor said to me in France was regarding encrypted communication was, what have you got to hide? Luckily, I've read history. I've read history books. I did study history in high school, and I immediately thought of the Stasi, East Germany, Lenin, Stalin. We can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Criminals will always be criminals. There will always be a barn to go talk in private behind. There'll always be an outside where people can talk privately. We have new technologies. No doubt those new technologies are going to be used for criminal use. There's no doubt. The thing is, in this case, at least in my case, I'm being judged for the crimes of others. I had no communications with criminals in my case with the French or with the Americans. Again, the irony here is that LevUp, the company that I worked for, had no business in France, no sales, never, and also in the United States, absolutely none. This case isn't just about, it's not just about privacy. It's about international law enforcement coming together in a very coordinated way, raising themselves above the rarefied air and of national sovereignty, and then conspiring to go after honeypots of data. They weren't going after a crime. They weren't saying, Sky Global committed a crime, let's investigate. They didn't do that. They saw the honeypots even before I even arrived on the scene at Sky Global, and they wanted to get it. And they conspired as to which countries would be best to, as a venue for judicial proceedings. They conspired to figure out how to get that data without doing, by going around the first principles, constitutional matters and articles of the European Convention of Human Rights and so on. They all conspired to find a way to take this data. This was not a criminal investigation. It was an international operation to exploit a large amount of data. And in this case, what Canadians should know is it was Canadian data. And it was done without the knowledge of the Canadian government. And now about 28 Canadians are on trial for organized crime. No French. All done in France, because France has the conspiracy laws to do that. Also, the Americans have the conspiracy laws to do that. And they fought over this judicial venue. And I got caught in the middle. Does that make sense? A lot of context and backstory, which I'm still learning. Every day I learn something new that happened within law enforcement. You know, I really understand that we have problems. We have societal problems, and Europe, no doubt, has huge ones. I think the problem is much bigger here than the ones you stated in Canada. It's a drug culture, whereby almost 25% people in France use casual drugs, or use drugs casually. It's a big problem. You could say that rather than Sky Global being the criminal organization, you could say that the French government is a criminal organization because 25% of their population do drugs. This world is a lot more gray than black and white. At the end of the day, I did not have a connection to organized crime. In fact, the only users of Sky Global that I ever met was one DEA agent who lured me down to the United States on a business trip without a predicate offense, without any evidence that I had done any wrongdoing in Canada. And nobody was looking. The RCMP, they must have been there somewhere. All I did was receive a random email. I went from Sky Global website to Sky Global support to my company, to me, to say, oh, we're interested in your phones in the United States. Please come down and help us with this. These people did not act as drug dealers. They did not talk about drugs. They just wanted phones. I got dragged into this through just a random email. And that could happen to any Canadian businessman or woman.
And Thomas Herdman has joined us on the podcast, and he's fighting for his innocence in France, and we'll continue to keep an eye out on the case and keep telling you how, as this progresses through the courts in France, and any other developments that happen anywhere around the world on this matter.
Thank you for the opportunity to tell my story.
Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In focus, Taiwan.tw. Taiwan's lithium cell maker adjusts capacity after plant fire. Moly Quantum Energy Corp will adjust production capacity at its Southern Taiwan Science Park facility to support high-end product shipments after a fire broke out at its lithium-ion battery cell plant in Kaohsiung. The company is cooperating with local government investigators and will prioritize fulfilling basic order needs for existing clients. Moly Energy originated in Vancouver. A plan to build a new battery facility in Maple Ridge was postponed. In ABC News Australia, Albanese's China visit was predictable and a stark contrast to Donald Trump's chaos. Xi Jinping is hoping to present as a paragon of certainty and stability. He's hoping memories of the trade punishments and wolf warrior diplomacy fade. Anthony Albanese raised concerns about the lack of notice before Chinese warships conducted live firing exercises and a lap of Australia in February. He also raised, once again, the plight of detained Australian citizen Yang Hengjun. There is no sign China will change its approach on either front. In Kyoto News, Japan Wire. Couche-Tard drops $47 billion bid to buy 7-Eleven parent company. The Canadian company ended its proposal to buy Japanese rival 7&I Holdings due to a lack of constructive engagement, ending a nearly year of talks. 7&I, the Japanese operator of the 7-Eleven convenience store chain and Couche-Tard, said in May that they had signed a non-disclosure agreement to facilitate the exchange of information. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, one thing has changed in Portland City Hall. The socialists are setting the agenda. Voters elected 12 city councillors from four districts to set policy, and they placed four members of the Democratic Socialists of America on the council. The hot socialist summer is a trend across the U.S. as progressives grow increasingly disaffected by what they see as a Democratic Party incapable of providing a viable alternative to the authoritarian aims of President Donald Trump. In New York City, DSA member Zoran Mamdani is on the brink of winning the mayor's race. In Crosscut, Seattle Public Library gets $450,000 to boost English language classes. The grant from Carnegie will help the libraries create advanced classes, teach learners computer skills, and expand existing practice sessions. The library has previously struggled to provide classes above the beginner level. With the new funding, it will offer three classes per quarter and support up to 285 more learners. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. BC Ferries hides shortlist and reasons for choosing China to build four ships. And communication breakdown. Surrey's mayor seeks briefings and crime stats from police chief. And head of Vancouver's FIFA World Cup 26 office was paid more than the city manager last year. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to all the British Columbians who supported the campaign to help save the life of Langford 10-year-old Charlie Pollock, the girl with Batten disease that needed a very expensive medication to stay alive. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 20th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 20th of July in 1969, Apollo 11 landed on the moon and Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong became the first humans to walk on the moon? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.